Navigating a divorce, the first few months of post-divorce is the hardest part of the whole thing, right? It's the whirlwind of moving parts, of changed life, of decisions, reactions, and frankly, it's just exhausting. So, like, there's so many layers to today's, our topic today of getting a divorce and just the first couple of months after divorce. Do you remember yours? Is it a distant memory? Is it a fog? Do you revisit it? Like, what do you remember about that time of your life?
I mean, I don't really revisit it often because it wasn't like a fun part. I think that honestly, the first few months of that, like the separation had been like 2 years, 1.5 years, something like that. Mm-hmm. Again, I don't really think about a lot of it anymore. And so I was kind of already used to living alone and it's just being me and my kids and stuff like that. So I do remember having that feeling of like, okay, when this is finalized, like, especially that first month, like, am I going to make it? Like, yeah. Am I going to be able to like get through a month and be okay? And then when I did, I was like, oh, I'm alive. Yeah. I'm okay. I can survive. Yeah. But I mean, that was kind of where I was at.
Okay, so you're a different scenario than me. This is great. So let me ask that question. So when you're separated first, you sort of learn to do life alone, but then there's this piece of paperwork. We just need this thing signed. Mm-hmm. But isn't it something's different about the day before and the day after? Because you're thinking, oh, I'm already single. Like, yeah, I'm single, but you're not. And then the day that's like, what's that? What is that feeling that now it's official?
Yeah, no, I agree. And before when I was separate, I never thought of myself as single because I did hope that things would be restored and all that jazz, right? Obviously it didn't. But yeah, I mean, the day it was final, it was like, oh, and then you move forward and you're like, oh, now I'm like officially single.
The safety net's gone. It's the tightrope and you look down and you're like, oh, there's nothing to catch me.
Yeah. I mean, I always say I felt like I was jumping off a cliff.
Yeah.
And I knew like the Lord would catch me and I'd be okay, but I felt like I was just free falling.
It's really funny with me. There's in Texas, there's the 60 days you have to wait. You know, some states it's a year you have to wait.
For what?
When you file to the day the judge hits the gavel or the gavel hits the thing, whatever it is.
whatever
that is. And I think there's the unknown. There's the negotiation. There's the arguments. There's the lawyers. There's, well, they'll take this deal, but not this deal. You know, all the stress of it all. And then I remember walking away from the lawyer to the car. And it just was this giant weight lifted, right? Just because it's settled. Like whatever it was in that decree is in the degree, like decree. It's like, it matters. It matters. Sometimes people think, I will figure it out. We're grown adults. No, no, no. That decree is everything.
It's everything.
What it says is so important. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people don't take advantage of that. I don't know if you feel this way with guys, but in my dating world, I've been told over and over and over, people said, I wish I would have thought. I wish I would have thought about that. I wish, because it seems so simple. It's like, oh, well, you know, you have those albums from college and this is my car and that's your car. Like, we can do this. We're adults. There's so many things that no one, like when your kid goes on a mission trip in 5 years, when your kids get braces, college funds, all these things that people don't think about until it hits you. And you're like, oh, I wish I would have put that in my, that $200 a month I'm getting is not going to cut it.
Totally. Yeah. Yeah.
There's so much, whatever gets you divorced, that problem, and then there's divorce itself, which is a whole nother layer. Mm-hmm. And then there's what you're saying is that, okay, that's settled. And now you look up and you're like, well, I'm single. Or I'm a single mom or a single dad. Like, I'm single. Like, it's a phenomenon that I don't think people fully grasp until you're there.
Mm-hmm. And I feel like there was, like, definitely a mourning period. For me, the mourning started way before.
Yeah, you had years. You mourned for years.
Years.
Yeah.
Years. And so, like, the day it was finalized, I was in a different state. You don't have to like go anywhere. It was just, okay. I literally got an email that said it's
really
done. That was it.
Oh, well, that's nice. What state is that thing to move?
Dramatic. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it wasn't quite as like dramatic, okay. Or it didn't feel like, oh, I have to go and I have to do this. Okay. It was just like, I got an email and I'm like, oh, okay.
It's done.
I just read it by myself in my house. Like, all right.
Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, so it's more of like a quiet moment.
Huh.
But a lot of mourning, you know, and I think that there's a lot of mourning for lots of different things and you never know what's going to trigger it. In fact, my friend and I called it screwdriver moments. And the reason is because like when after the divorce was final, I had zero tools,
mm-hmm.
right? Another weird thing you don't think about, right? As yeah. a woman or the man, whoever ends up with the tools, I don't know.
Right. But the guy normally does.
Normally. So yeah. I didn't have a screwdriver. And I remember my dad came over and he was helping me fix some things. And he goes, hey, can you go grab the screwdriver?
Yeah.
And I started bawling my eyes out
because yeah, I didn't have a screwdriver.
Yeah.
I don't even know where we keep screwdrivers.
Right.
And it's not there.
Yeah. And so he was like, all right, let's go to Home Depot. Uh-huh. And then we had to get all the tools.
Okay. Wow. Okay. Wow. That's deep. That has a lot of layers to it. So is part of that as a female feeling like, okay, now I'm having to wear a male hat. Not that mm-hmm. genders are that defined in this area. Not that men have to be, we do tools and women do whatever you do. But I wonder if women feel that way more than men. Because I like with me, I wash clothes. I never washed clothes when I was married. I could have. I mean, I did before I was married. And yeah. I didn't while I was married. And then now I do it now. And it doesn't bother me. Like, I like washing clothes. Like, I hate dishes. Oh, I hate dishes. But I wash me some clothes. But I know some females like, well, yard work, it triggers them because they go out and they're like, I should not be weed eating.
Mm-hmm. No, I have those triggers.
You do?
I do. I do. In fact, just the other day, I realized, wow, there's some things that I need fixing, repairing. And every time I walk by those in the house,
it's a reminder.
It's a reminder. And I was like, okay, Carrie, you know what you could do is hire a handyman. And let's just get this done. And then now,
don't think about it.
Now you've removed that trigger.
Yeah.
Right. But yeah, I agree. I mean, every married couple takes on their roles. You know, so it doesn't matter if it's a masculine or feminine role. It's just you have your roles. Yeah. And then when like that person is then gone, it's like, oh
I got to retake that over.
Yeah. Or I have to learn it.
And as another one too, is just habits. Is watching movies, going, whatever your habits were, they're gone. And it's like, well, I can't go to that habit. What if they're doing that habit? We both can't show up at the same habit. And then you have to break the habits. Like, it's so funny. I scream this all the time. And it's broken record. Divorce is so much more complicated than I ever thought.
Mm-hmm.
And I think to the people listening, The people that are the ones that either instigate it or don't want to fight for it or whatever, I think whatever it is going on in their head, it's, well, I'll just be better off without them. They'll be better off without me. Mm-hmm. The kids will be better off, whatever their reasons are. And it's this idea of like, well, I just need this person out of my life and then everything will be okay. It's like, it's so naive.
Yeah, that's definitely not the whole picture.
It's not the full picture. It's mm-hmm. divorce is so layered, so complicated, and dare I say, so generational. Mm-hmm. It's not this moment in time. It's not this sheet of paper, and it's not moving from a house to an apartment or apartment to a house. It's not.
Mm-mm.
Okay, so, oh wow, you triggered so many thoughts on my head with the idea of changing habits and changing friends. We're going to talk about friends in another episode of the how you lose. That's another giant ripple effect of separation. But okay, so let's talk about, especially as Christians, I don't want to go necessarily straight into the church right now, but I will say if you're a Christian, I'm assuming a good chunk of your friends are Christians, but what kind of advice did you get? Was it healthy? Was it not healthy? Was it, what do you wish you knew? Like, if you could go talk to yourself right now, what advice would you have given yourself that you didn't get?
That I didn't get? Yeah. I mean, I will say when it came to just like friends, and we are going to talk about all that, but yeah. like a lot of them just tried to stay out of it, right? Mm-hmm. Didn't want to give any advice. So the advice that I got was more from mentors or counselors, therapists, pastors, you know?
Semi-sound advice.
Yeah. Very, very sound advice. Okay. I don't know if I have anything that I can think of that I didn't get, but I think that some of the biggest pieces of advice that I got that were super helpful were like, widen your circle, you know, make sure that you're not just trying to keep all of this just between you guys or you guys and one counselor. Like, you need to widen the circle. There need to be multiple people that are godly, wise people that understand every single little thing that's going on so that they can speak in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That was probably the wisest piece of advice, because then for me, when I was getting the exact same advice from all those people and those people didn't know each other.
Yeah. Then you knew it was pretty good advice.
Yes.
That's right. Yeah. Instead of one person, like six people have told me blankety blank.
Yes.
Yeah. That's really good. I think with me, I had, I don't know if people exactly said it, but they certainly implied it and underlined it. It was, take your time. Like, this isn't something that you just, the sheet of paper comes in and you're like, well, I'm just going to pick myself up and I'm going to do this. It's like, okay, yeah, I mean, yeah, you're right. You are going to have to move, or you're going to have to, your finances are all changed. Yeah, you're right. You are going to have to tough it out and endure. But that attitude of just, I'm ready. I'm ready for the next phase of my life. Like, no, breathe, rest. You have no idea what's coming.
No idea.
And that's once again, when you're in the whirlwind of it all, it's sort of like people, I use this analogy all the time. It's like, you know, if somebody's dying in need of water, you don't go tell them, oh, you need to go dig a well. And no, just give them the water. Like, you know, right. You know, and I feel the same thing. It's like sometimes you're in the middle of a crisis and it's like, well, you just need to breathe. It's like, well, I got a house to pay. I got kids to feed. I've got to endure. And the answer is, yeah, you do. Mm-hmm. It's sad that you've got to step up and be independent and hustle and survive. But there's that balance of also sit, breathe, trust, and you're not in a hurry.
No, you're not in a hurry. No, you're not in a hurry for anything. For anything, whether it comes to dating or, you know, a new haircut
or moving
yeah, or whatever. However big or small.
No, it's right. It's okay. That's a great segue, because I was going to ask you about that. Is, you already had the separation, so I don't know if this was dramatic for you. Mm-hmm. Did something about the divorce trigger you into, okay, now I'm going to paint the house? Now, because I know when it, with me, in my situation, I got the house and I did a makeover. Like, because back to the triggers, is every time I walk by a scenario that when you're married, I'm going to use the word tolerate. Okay, that's a bad word because it doesn't mean my ex did anything wrong. But it's like, if that's her blanket, it's not my blanket, it was her favorite blanket. And then I look at it and I'm like, I don't want that blanket. Mm-hmm. So I just got rid of, I moved things, I rearranged. I'm like, I've never liked the sugar on the counter. I don't use sugar. I don't want the sugar. So I take the sugar and I got it. Just anything that made me think of her or us in a weird way, I just purged. And I had a, this sounds childish, but you have to understand, I live in the country. So burning things is not a big deal because we burn stuff all the time. You have a burn barrel. So it wasn't like I,
right.
It was an odd thing to burn, but I did. I had a burn party and it was therapeutic.
Sure.
It was great. But I do regret, you know, how like anything, you sometimes swing the pendulum too far. There was a couple of things that I probably just, I wanted it gone. And later I'm like, I should have kept that.
Yeah. Yeah. I was a little more slow with that. I just wanted to make sure, like, will I regret in 10 years not having this? But for me, it was more like anything that triggered me that brought a negative emotion up.
Yeah.
I just got rid of it. I made so many trips to Goodwill.
Really?
So many trips to Goodwill. But it felt very good. It was like it lightened the load because you don't want to be, you know, your surroundings really make a big difference in how you feel every day. And so if you are looking at things that are continually reminding you of negative stuff, that is going to impact how you feel every day, you know? So I didn't make any big changes at all.
Big haircut. You didn't move cities or whatever. Yeah.
No, I just really, really slow. I mean, I did move, but that was kind of like already in the back of my mind and then prayed
yeah.
about it.
Yeah, you weren't running from something. Running to something.
No, yeah.
There's a difference for sure. Mm-hmm. Okay. So now church. So I gotta be honest, like I'm so right now in my life, I mean, I'm just being transparent. I am so anti-religion, pro-Jesus, anti-church. And I know people hear that and that's sometimes confrontational in their mind. It's just, well, how can Jesus love the church? You should too. Okay. Well, I get that. I get the theology of it. I'm talking the practicality, American church culture. It has become something different, and that part I don't like. Mm-hmm. And so part of the reason I even have this podcast is I feel like divorced people, Christians in particular, do not get good, sound advice and or empathy from the church. And they need real talk, not verses thrown at them. Mm-hmm. What was your experience? Because I also know I have people say, oh my gosh, my church is the only reason I survived.
That's great.
I'm not saying it's not possible.
Sure.
And I'd also say they may have been really helpful for you. Doesn't mean they gave you any sound, anything. It's just they were your community and it worked for you. Mm-hmm. But what can you tell me a little bit about your experience? Did you get bad advice? Did you feel welcome? Was it challenging? Did you have to change churches? Like, yeah, talk through that a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, before the separation, we were in like a Bible study group, small group, things like that. And I mean, honestly, I felt just completely abandoned.
Wow.
Like, completely abandoned.
By your church family, uh-huh, which is a double abandonment. A double abandonment.
Yeah. And I understand that they did not understand everything was going on because there's only so many people. You're only going to tell all the things to a very, very select amount of people. And I had a pastor, I had a counselor, I had, you know, a couple certain family members, you know, some older mentors, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then I was like,
okay. But everybody else in the hallway has no idea.
They don't know, or maybe they only hear bits and pieces or rumors. Mm-hmm. There was probably rumors. Sure. I don't know if there were, but I'm just saying.
You feel like there is.
You feel like there are. Yeah. And so that was tough because I felt like I had to go through that season without people really, you know, walking beside me.
Yeah.
And then even after the divorce, when I moved to Texas, the first church I was at, there was not the support I needed. It was more just like, oh, we found out that you're divorced. So, okay, therefore, without wanting to know my story, well, we should just get y'all back together. Why don't we just arrange a meeting?
Let's take a quick break.
Are you making the tough decision about divorce or in the middle of your recovery? Well, I have a few books you will want to read. Don't navigate one of the hardest journeys you will face without a roadmap. Visit toddturner.com/books to find the helpful guide you can keep with you during this time of decisions and healing. toddturner.com/books. Now back to the program. No way.
Mm-hmm.
These stories drive me
insane
because it's the tension between truth and grace.
Right.
They're scoring truth so high. God loves marriage. So
he does.
Wants you restored.
Yeah.
Which I'm like, hold on. I mean, yeah, in a perfect world, sure.
Sure.
But it doesn't mean that trumps trauma, abuse, none of that. Oh my goodness, I didn't know that happened to you. Like, that drives me insane. And so now you even have to say yes, no, maybe, or I'm going to another church.
I said no. left, and everybody that was in my community group at that time 100% left my side. I have not heard from them in years.
Are you serious? So in other words, mm-hmm. you're not, you don't love the Lord enough, or you don't respect marriage enough, so therefore you wouldn't even try to reconcile.
I honestly can't answer for them. Yeah. I don't know. I think, but you know, I think that it was very unfortunate. And so I left that church. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, and I was warned. I had a lot of friends that had told me that had gone through divorces that, you know, were, it was even, they had, you know, what we would call like biblical grounds, things like that. Yeah, right?
Right.
And they were told like, look, like this is how, you know, a lot of times you're going to get treated. You're not going to get the support. Like, it's just like churches don't, a lot of the church doesn't know what to do, you know, right. And they just want restoration. And I can understand that. That's what I wanted too. But
yeah, yeah, right. So I mean, like you didn't put in the time, like you put in your
Lord,
time.
I put in the time.
I have a story of a buddy of mine who, same thing, he worked at a church. Mm-hmm. Now, he was only allowed to like, be associate pastor or whatever because he had been divorced, right? But he somehow was working for a church, and which, right, it's a miracle because some churches wouldn't even put you on staff divorced. But I'll give him that they let him be on staff until his ex-wife, who they've been married, they divorced for a long while, and she had done him wrong. And she comes and tells the elders, I want to restore my marriage. So they told him, like, well, you need to restore your marriage. He's like, well, I don't want to. They're like, well, they put him on a forced sabbatical. And he's like, well, I'm fishing every day because I know my answer. Like, I prayed, I did. But, you know, when you don't love someone anymore, to force her, that's another thing I don't think people think through. Mm. When you say force a reconciliation, like, it's not like you can just forgive. Like, some things aren't there. I mean, you can forgive, but you don't have to forget.
I've forgiven.
Yeah.
I've 100% forgiven.
I've forgiven too. But it doesn't mean that I want reconciliation. You can forgive and not go back. You don't love somebody. That feels like more of a disservice to go back and say, well, I'm marrying you because our church says we should be married. Don't love you. Mm-hmm. Don't want to love you. Mm-hmm. We've caused damage. Like, it just, you're divorced.
Yeah. I mean, I do think there's a space for, like, let's say one person was wrong. I mean, I know there's always two people, but you know what I mean? One person was like severely wronged and there's a divorce, right? And then that person that had wronged them wants to come and say, hey, like, I am sorry. They want to own up to things.
Fair.
They want to get back together. But I think that person that was wronged, I think that they should seriously consider sitting down, having a cup of coffee, hearing them out, hearing their heart, especially if they want to apologize. Like, you never know what could happen. And then who knows? Maybe restoration can happen down the road, and maybe it doesn't.
Right.
But I don't think
that's still
a
good moment.
Yeah.
If it's real. That's the other thing, too, is I feel like that's the other problem with divorce, is divorce is so catastrophic. And like I said, the tsunami effect of it, I think some people were like, I'm so sorry. Well, what? Are you sorry that our finances are run? Are you sorry our kids are messed up? Are you sorry? Like, what are you sorry about? There's a lot of things to be sorry for. So I've had people, you know, I'm sorry. You're like, well, okay, but are you sorry you got caught? Are you like, what are you sorry for?
Sure.
And so one time somebody asked me that with my ex. They go, have you forgiven? And, you know, I take the word love really important. Like, I don't say I love you unless I mean it.
Sure.
And I don't say forgiven. Like, so somebody goes, have you forgiven? And I go, if I tell you yes, I'm lying. Because which one of the 100 things am I? You want me to just blanket forgive? Or is it this lie or this thing or whatever? So it took me a while to learn what forgiven means. So in other words, to your point, even if somebody comes back with a repentive heart, man, that would take a lot of conversation to say, what do you mean by that? You sorry for hurting me? You hurt that time or that time? Mm-hmm. Or that time or that time?
Right.
You know, and so, yeah, I think it's, but to your point, I do believe if, when possible, nothing's a blanket rule, but when possible, if the giant offender in a relationship wants to come and say, I'm sorry, that's probably not a bad conversation to have.
Sure.
With boundaries.
With boundaries. And it's going to look different for everybody. And maybe if it was an abusive situation, maybe you, it's not a conversation between the two of you. It's a conversation with a group.
With a third party.
With at least a third party.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, so.
I feel that too. You know, I've always wondered, with especially with affairs, and I'm going to say affairs with Christians, because that happens plenty.
Mm-hmm.
That idea of, does anybody ever apologize? Like, you know how married couple, Christian married couples have an affair and then they'll go get married. Is there a certain point? Because, you know, when you justify it in your head, you're like, well, the Lord brought me this person, or I'm better off, you know, whatever. I'm like, wrong.
Right, wrong, right.
Right, that's not theologically sound at all. God did not break his own rules and say, yeah, I brought you a better person. But at some point, do you just go back and say, you know, do both people say, you know, we're sorry. Like, we made a mistake. We apologize, but we're not going to get divorced. Like, now, does two divorces make it right? You know, that's a whole other deal is, you know, you get a divorce and then you say you're sorry. Do you stay married? And what if you have new kids? Like, how are you going to tell those people that? Well, we made a mistake 15 years ago. We're going to now divorce and cause you trauma. See, divorce has ripple effects.
It's so multi-layered, and it's so individualized too. I think everybody has a different story. And I think too, this is also in the context of you have fought to not make it happen, right? I just feel like that needs to be said again, even though I know that we talked about that the first time.
I feel like
it needs to be said in like every time we chat, because
agreed.
That is the heart I know you're coming from and I'm coming from, of like, this is not what we want for anybody. But if you find yourself here after,
if you find yourself here after giving it your all,
yes,
then what?
Here's some advice.
That's right. That I say it like this, like, I don't want it to be accused of romanticizing divorce.
No,
but unfortunately for me, like on my YouTube channel, I talk about the upside of divorce. And I know people are going to come in that doorway. They're like, this guy's acting like you should get divorced because it's, but guess what? If you find yourself here, there are some silver linings. I'm a different person today than I ever would have been married. There are some, I travel more. I know myself better. Mm-hmm. I'm a better, those define better, but I'm a better person. I'm a person I would have never been.
Okay. Married. I can agree with that. Yeah. I can't call that silver linings personally for me,
fair.
But I think it's like, okay, this happened to me and it was horrible and awful, but then like the Lord has redeemed certain parts of that for me personally, for my kids, and has grown me a lot.
Yeah.
I just couldn't call it a silver lining.
I don't know.
That's okay if that's your choice of words.
I know. It's fair. I think one, I'm trying to help people realize that they're not doomed.
You're not doomed. No.
You can come to the other side.
Yeah, you can come out and you can be stronger and you can learn more about your walk with the Lord and you can grow and move through all sorts of things, you know?
When you're not tethered, when you're not yoked, the Lord can use you in different ways. Like, it's just true. It doesn't mean, hey, if you're listening, you're thinking about getting divorced, trust me, go do it. It's awesome. I don't mean that. But, like, I just believe, I don't know. I believe that God is a God of redemption and restoration. It doesn't mean your marriage has to be redeemed or restored.
Sure, yeah. He can redeem other parts.
Us, individually. I do believe that. Which is, I'm going to circle back to bad advice about, you know, when you're in this situation, I think sometimes your friends, especially our Christian friends, they just want to put a positive spin.
Yes.
So it's like, you'll be better off. Or God's got somebody better for you. Horrible.
I never heard that. Thankfully, I never heard anything like that ever.
I did. Like, God's got somebody better or whatever. You'll terrible. Be happier with somebody else.
No, that's terrible.
Terrible. Terrible.
Yeah.
It's not trendy. And once again, you can't speak for God. Like, I don't know. I could have a car wreck tomorrow. I never found anybody else. Never did. So it's a lie to tell somebody that here's what's going to happen in your life. Now, are there opportunities? Sure. And there's, you know, like, I think one of the things I want to land the plane on this discussion for sure, I don't mean I'm landing the plane, but on this topic, is that, I already lost my train of thought. It's this idea that we live in this broken world And it's nothing is going to be perfect till we get to heaven. And then so this idea that this American Christianity pushes on us that you know the Bible's a playbook, your best life now, and as soon as this bad things happen, well, God's got something. But Jeremiah 29:11 nonsense, you know, that idea. And
it's just nonsense.
It's nonsense. Yeah. And we live in an American Christian culture of, well, I'm a Christian, and God, it's always abundance, abundant living, abundant whatever. And it's just like, well, pull yourself up. God's got something better for you. And it's like, we live in a broken world. My marriage just broke. It's broken. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if it's going to get fixed. Mm-hmm. And it may not get fixed. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, what do you do in that? Mm-hmm. And so that's just that balance between trusting the Lord,
yeah,
drawing close to Him, and living in a broken world that's full of pain. I mean, if I have a takeaway from being divorced, I am 100% more empathetic, which is my next question for you, is I saw things so differently until I walked it. Mm-hmm. And now that I walked it, it is the silver lining for me is that I am so much more attentive to people who are hurting and broken than I ever would have been before. I just didn't get it. And now that I get it, I have a podcast, for crying out loud, where I speak to people who, I mean, come to me. All, you wouldn't believe the emails I get. And people mm-hmm. just like, thank you. I never got this from anybody else at my mm-hmm. church. Nobody gets it. I'm hurting. I'm whatever. I literally got some on YouTube yesterday and said, please pray for me today. Like, this is like, people are out there
hurting.
They're hurting.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I was horrible at that. So I guess that segues my question to you is, what advice would you give on this side of divorce to somebody going through or have you or do you frequently? Like what's some sort of high level bullet points that if somebody says, hey, and you know, Steve just moved out, we're getting a divorce. What's your answer now? And maybe what it might have not been that before.
Yeah. I mean, definitely the whole widen the circle, like I talked about before, you know, make sure you've got like a counselor or therapist. You got to have somebody like that outside of your circle too, that you can just talk to.
Right.
You know, that's just so.
Not a friend conversation.
Somebody that's like trained, you know, and then, I mean, I would encourage them. And even walk alongside them if I could, you know, if it was that kind of a friend or whatever of like, okay, like, what is your time in the Word looking like? Like, where are you at? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Are you angry and just don't, you know, or are you wanting to just like I did basically like sleep with your Bible? You know what I mean? Right. Yeah, like just I had it right there with me all the time. Because you got to just really, really, really cling to the Lord. And then I think really be focused on, like, if you have children, mm-hmm. like, what are their needs? Where are they at? What help do they need right now? Amen. And, like, really your focus, if you have children, it really should just be on, like, you, your healing, and your kids. Like, it really – and this is – also, you got to fight, right? So there's that layer.
There's so many layers.
But hone in on that, because your kids right now need way more help, way more attention, way more care and love than they ever have. Yeah. But you also need that too. So it's hard because I was in that situation where my girls were really, really struggling. I had fallen apart, you know, and it was like, okay, well, I kind of had to like pull myself up by my bootstraps with the Lord's help and really just pour into them, you know, but I really think you need to make it about, you know, taking care of yourself, taking care of your kids, spending time with the Lord, having a good therapist. And that's kind of your world for a while.
I totally agree. Matter of fact, I was going to ask that. You're touching on exactly what I was going to ask you. That tension between being a good parent and remember, you know, the airline, when the face mask, you got to take care of yourself. At the same time, you got to take care of your kids. And where's that? It's a weird balance, because if you're not healthy, you're not going to be healthy for your kids. And at the same time, I know people who are trying to get healthy in the unhealthy ways.
Yeah.
Right? And they're codependent, they're dating, they're like, well, I need blank.
No, you don't.
You don't. Focus on those kids. Breathe. Rest.
Sleep.
You even said about
eat well.
Seriously, if you sit home, eat horrible, you feel horrible. You feel horrible. You eat horrible, and it's a circle down.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like, I give people permission to nap. Like, watch Netflix. Like, it's okay. But get up and walk. Say yes to things you don't want to say yes to. Just get out of the house. You got to socialize. I totally believe in that. But you said something a second ago, and I'm going to push a little bit on it. Like, you asked somebody, are you still angry? Well, sometimes the answer is, it's okay. Like, do you want to live in anger? No. Mm-hmm. But it's sort of the front, it's back to that Christianese I don't like, is this idea of like, well, I'm really anxious about this. Like, you know, we're fixing to lose our house. My kids got cancer, whatever. Well, the Bible says don't be anxious. Well, screw you, Bob. I'm anxious. You know, and so my answer is, you know, I'm angry. Well, you shouldn't be angry. Well, you know, you may have plenty to be angry for, but don't live in it. How long are you in that?
Yeah, and are you angry at the Lord? Are you angry at the situation? Are you like,
great,
where's the anger? Yeah. And like, you know, for me, if I was in that situation, okay, why am I angry? What's going on? Mm-hmm. What, you know, and maybe it's just everything has come crashing down around me, you know, but I think that's kind of an emotion. God gave us all the emotions, yeah, right?
So there's time for everything.
There's time for everything, right? Yeah. But you also don't want to hang out there too long. So I think that like allowing yourself to feel that stuff, but then also reminding yourself of the truth while you're angry.
That's right. And having like a long vision that realizes it's a season.
It's a season.
You're in a season right now that does end. And I say this all the time, the end isn't when you get a new spouse or a new boyfriend or a new girlfriend. That is not next. You've got so much work. It is so hard to unyoke and to be single. Learn who you are, not who you were. That person's gone. Mm-hmm. Your pre-divorce self, your pre-marriage person is not you anymore. Sure. You've been married. Maybe you have kids. Maybe you don't. You've got to unyoke and then move forward. And that's this long season. And throwing somebody in there to date to just kill your time or to make you think I need somebody is one of the most foolish things you can do post-divorce.
I think it's selfish.
It's very selfish.
Yeah.
It's selfish for the other person. I mean, like, it hurts them.
It hurts them.
Hurt people. You're wasting time. And it hurts your kids.
Oh, totally. And really, honestly, it hurts you in the long run. It hurts you in the long run.
I agree.
And I also want to say, because a friend had said this to me, she's like a few years ahead of me being divorced. And this was a few years ago. We were out on a walk and she said, yeah, I was talking to a group of people that they've all been divorced. And they were all kind of talking about how long does it take until you don't wake up and think about your ex anymore. Wow. And the consensus was about 5 years. And what's really interesting, it was about around the 5-year mark for me, mm-hmm. it shifted, you know? And so
I agree. It's I'm 5+ years and I'm in a place now where I was not a year mm-hmm. ago or 2 years ago. I've been embarrassed about it because I hear people get married in 1 year, 2 year, 3 year. And I'm like, I raised my hand. It's taken me 5 years to finally get like. This is really funny. I haven't told anybody this, so here we go. Now I'm gonna tell everybody.
Okay.
We're recording this, by the way. I just now, I'm gonna say now, like, you know how nothing's like at this moment. It happens a little bit, then more and more and more, and then next thing you know, it's like, oh, it's happening. I can sit at my kitchen table. You know how long I sit at my kitchen table alone, and I would just feel alone at my kitchen table. Mm. And now I sit at my kitchen table. I'm just happy to be at my kitchen table. Like, I don't even think about I used to be married. I used to, or I want to be, or I just exist. And I sit down and read a book on my couch alone, and I'm just happy I have a house and a place to have. I am content mm-hmm. being. That took me 5 years to get there and a lot of failed nonsense along the way. Like, it wasn't a smooth ride.
Yeah.
But I finally am just happy where I'm at. And it's been a tough journey because how many times, I think I mentioned this on podcast, YouTube, something, But at one time, I remember getting out of bed and I just threw the covers off in anger. Mm. I was so mad that I was alone. Mad. And I was like, I shouldn't be alone. Why am I alone? I went up, went to the bathroom, and I came back, and I was like, I was processing, like, what am I so mad? In my 50, whatever, 40 at the time, 48 year, I've never thrown the covers off violently. Like, that's never happened. Well, so I knew something was weird, because who does that? And so I walk back to bed, I go, what is it? What triggered that? And it was because I wanted someone to be quiet to get up. I wanted to come back to bed quietly. I wanted somebody to be there, and they weren't. And I was mad that everything had been that I loved and cherished was taken away from me. Mm. And I was just ticked. And then it took a year or two to learn how to sleep alone without having somebody there. Like, that's just, you know, with me, I was like 20 years almost. Like, that's a long time to sleep with somebody, then they're not there anymore. And then all, like I say, all the new habits and patterns and whatever. And then you start forward thinking about, well, what do you want in a new relationship? What would that look like? And how am I going to navigate that? And whatever. And then now I'm past that. And I'm just like, Todd, it's just God and me and my family. And that's where I'm putting my effort and my work.
That's great.
And it's like, I don't know. Like, I finally got to the point of considering what would life be like if I never get married. Because before I was like, I will. Sure. Now I'm like, yeah, maybe I won't.
Yeah.
And you know what? It's sort of nice.
Well, that's good.
Isn't it great? 5 years.
That's great.
So maybe your people are right. Maybe 5 years is the mark. I guess it's a ratio of how long, you know, if you've been married 3 years and get divorced, I guess it doesn't take you 5 to undo it.
Yeah, probably not.
There's a ratio here.
But you never know.
You don't know how long how long is it going to take you to heal? Mm-hmm. Like once again, you sort of said it earlier. Though one person, I'm going to say typically, I don't know if that's a fair way to say it. One person typically is the instigator of a divorce, right? One person normally skews a little bit harder as they're the violator of trust or the betrayer or the whatever it is. But we're both, none of us are fully innocent.
No.
At all.
Sure, nobody's perfect.
Nobody's perfect. And it's not as simple as, well, I should have done this one thing. No. What is the root problem of that made you do that or not do that? And being single is a great time to just say, all right, Lord, let's get under the hood. Figure out what's why do I think this way? Why do I act this way? Why did I treat them this way when this happened? And why did I allow that thing to happen? Mm-hmm. And that takes time. It takes therapy. Mm-hmm. It takes wisdom.
Yeah, and I think it's important to just take out that time to really work on yourself. And I do want to say, and I love that you're in a place where you're like, I am so happy being alone and all that. I also want to speak to the person that's like, I struggle with being single. I want to do life with somebody. I don't like being alone because I think the church really promotes the whole like singleness is a gift.
Yeah.
And is it? Like, I feel like that's taking some scripture out of context.
Yeah. How did God, when Eve came, he goes, this is good. And then later Paul's like, well, it's so good to be single. It's like, well, hold on. Which one is it? Because if it's good to be single, then Adam could have just hung out by himself.
Right.
It ain't that good. So I hear you.
Yeah.
There.
So it isn't, you know, God even said it's not good for a man to be alone. Yeah. So like, you know, I don't buy into that idea of like singleness is this amazing gift. Do I think that this is a gift that was given to me? No, it wasn't a gift. I'm in this situation because of sin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know?
Broken world ripples.
Yeah, it doesn't mean that I don't have joy, that I don't, that I'm not content with the Lord and what he's given me and taken away and all that. But like, if you do have a desire to not, you know, do life by yourself, like, that's okay. Like, that's a good desire. And the Lord, you know, puts that on some of our hearts. And for some of us, he's like, no, you know, for some people, he does give them the gift of celibacy, which is actually what that verse is talking about, right?
Yeah. Which not everybody has that gift. So
not everyone has that gift.
That's 100% taken out of context.
Yeah. So I just wanted to speak to that because.
No, that's a great point. That's a slippery slope because we could talk an hour about this because that I get confused on that. Because when I hear, here's what I know about you, okay? We've talked outside these microphones before.
Okay.
But I do believe what it takes to have a successful second marriage or third or whatever, next marriage, whatever that number is. I'm going to say second because that's how I see it, is this desire that says, I want to love someone biblically.
Yeah.
And I want to partner with somebody. We live, because of what I said about the American Christian culture, we have this idea of like, whatever makes me happy, whatever, whatever. Like, I have all these criteria for somebody to be my next. And if you don't behave this way, then I'm not going to behave this way. And we put our walls up. And that's why we see so this, the swipe culture is so dangerous. Yeah. Because it's like, when you're compatible for me, I'll love you.
Yep.
And the Bible's like, oh, no, no, you love, and then you become compatible. You have to have that attitude of like, I want to be someone's partner, and I will suffer. Mm-hmm. I will sacrifice. I will do what's best for that relationship at my own demise.
Mm-hmm.
That will work.
Yeah, totally.
And I don't think, when I say I don't see that hardly at all. And I'm guilty. This is not me criticizing the world. I have been guilty of this, of being highly judgmental, and wondering, well, that's not a compatible. I don't want that. I don't want that. So I'm not gonna do that because I don't have to. Which is another thing. We don't have to. I know. Isn't it complicated?
Mm-hmm.
Like I don't. This is the thing I can't do. I'm a pretty good empathizer. And I'm pretty good at, you know, you don't have to die to write a death scene. So I'm pretty good at putting myself in people's place. I don't understand the difference between being divorced in your 20s and 30s, and even 40s. But 50s and 60s, like, I feel like your ruts are, you're deeper. It's harder to combine lives here than it is in your 20s. It's like you get divorced in your 20s. You're like, well, I can still have kids. Like, my career's still going. Everything's on this forward path. And you just say, oh, well, I'll pick a new person and we'll keep going.
Mm-hmm.
At this side, past childbirthing and rearing ages, I feel like you do have this choice of like, well, I could just.
Well, there's always a choice.
It's always a choice.
It just depends on, you know, where you're at and what your personality's like and what you're desiring and different things like that. You know,
don't you want to couple with people going in the same direction you're going with, and you have the ability to do that.
Yeah.
So where's that tension between what is compatible and then what is desirable? And like,
I think, you know, if we're talking about like finding another spouse, dating, stuff like that, I mean, I think that people just get way too picky on things. You know, I think it should just be some of the basics of like, do they love Jesus? Are they actually walking with the Lord? Do they have a forgiving heart? Do they listen? You know, like kind of just like basics. And then a lot of the other stuff is just kind of like, those aren't non-negotiables, you know, or. Yeah. Do you know what I'm saying?
All right, so I've said this before to somebody. I've said it multiple times. It feels stupid, but I think I'm right. And that is, if, I almost want to repeat everything you just said. If someone loves the Lord, like they're truly, like they are trying to be Christ-like. Okay, I'm not saying they're religious. I'm not, you know, forget.
Just Christ-like.
When they go to church, just be Christ-like.
Say it, yeah.
And they're a good communicator, and they understand what a covenant means.
Yeah.
Couldn't those people just get married and work it out?
Yep.
I feel like people could just say,
totally,
I found somebody who fits these criteria.
Yep.
And we're going to make a commitment, and we're going to be in a covenant.
Totally.
And it may suck for a while, and it may be bumpy some areas, because you'll realize, oh my gosh, I didn't know you chewed with your mouth open. And for the love of goodness, that drives me crazy. But if somebody's Christ-like, and they're a good communicator.
Talk about it.
Can't you work through that?
Yeah.
Because I love you and I love the Lord, I'm going to work on my chewing. And because you love the Lord and you're a good communicator, you're like, I'm going to learn to not get so freaking upset about it.
Sure.
I think so.
Sure. I think so. There's a pastor that I follow, and he says that all the time. He says that, you know, and he even says this with, because he speaks more like kids in their 20s and stuff like that. Well, young adults, not kids.
Young adults.
But he said that, you know, young adults will come to him all the time like, oh, I can't find somebody to marry. And he's like, literally, you could be married by the end of the week.
Yeah.
Like, literally, you could. Like,
if you want to.
If you want to. And like you said, just find someone with those kind of criteria that also has, you know, a teachable heart.
Yeah.
Right? Teachable spirit. And you know, I mean, this is a whole other topic.
It's a whole other topic. We've slippery slope, but it's a great point.
But
though.
You could. It's not that hard. And I think that today we make, if we're just talking about dating and stuff like that, we make it so much about us. It's yeah. such a selfish thing instead of going like, hey, can I find somebody that loves Jesus, is a hard worker, you know, has some of these yeah. basic, really awesome core things. And then, okay, how can we die to ourselves to yeah. like build something and honor the Lord?
Okay. Agreed. But now we're going to wrap up because we're going to combine two things that feel over here.
Okay.
And that is, I believe everything you just said, and I said is true about marriage. And at the same time, it doesn't feel prudent for two hurt people or a hurt person to marry, which is why we're saying don't
yeah.
start that until you've healed. And
sure.
So we're speaking out of both sides of our mouth, but I believe they're both together.
But I think it's good stuff to have in the back of your mind while you're like walking through the healing process.
Yeah. 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 When it comes time to date,
later,
we'll have another conversation about dating and what the lenses mm-hmm. you have on, because I think that's important. But I would also say it would not be wise, because you can't make good decisions when you're hurt. Divorce is trauma. Mm-hmm. That's, I want to scream that. Mm-hmm. It's not a sheet of paper and moving houses. It's trauma. It's generational. And it takes a long time to come out of it and to land well. And not everybody lands well.
No.
And a lot of people make bad decisions, mm-hmm. life decisions, bad haircuts, bad life decisions, bad job changes, bad new boyfriends, bad new husbands. Mm-hmm. And I actually read a stat today that said that 6% of people remarry their first spouse, and 70% of those get divorced again.
Hmm.
Isn't that crazy? And it makes you wonder, like, whatever the dysfunction was the first time never really disappeared.
Never got
worked
out, yeah.
They went back because it was familiar or whatever. Mm. You're still mm-hmm. hurt. Mm-hmm. So I think that leads to get healed.
Mm-hmm.
Heal your kids. They will thank you mm-hmm. later. They may not mm-hmm. thank you, but Jesus will.
Yeah. And I think also just kind of be very mindful of who you talk to about what's going on. And especially, like, don't be talking about it on social media. Don't, you know, just, and be very careful about the words that you say about your ex, you know.
Parents.
Yeah. I mean, in the Bible, it says, like, from the overflow of the heart, the mouth speaks.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So really check in on yourself. And if you are speaking a lot of negativity, go, what's going on in my heart? You know what I mean? And just
it doesn't mean they don't deserve. Doesn't mean they've not done
doesn't
wrong.
Mean
any,
it
doesn't
no,
mean anything.
Doesn't mean any of that.
Right.
But like, you also have control over what you speak, what you're thinking about, what you're harboring in your heart.
Yeah.
You know, and really just like keeping it more quiet, keeping it to yourself, having some really trusted people you talk to. Awesome. But yeah. then outside of that, like, just, you know.
Totally agree. It doesn't make you look wise, and everybody knows when you're on social media and you see something, you're only getting one side of the story. It just feels foolish. It does you
no good.
It
is foolish. It is foolish.
And your kids yeah. hear it.
Yeah.
And that's their parent. And I don't care if your parents screwed up. You did too.
Sure.
You did too in various ways. And so you have to be super duper careful about how you speak to the public and how you speak to your kids about your ex, no matter. They may be an idiot.
Mm-hmm.
They may be a jerk. They may be a first class, whatever.
Right.
That's your kid's parent.
Right.
Salvage that respect and relationship, because it's worth gold later. And mm-hmm. it's going to create you more harm when you sever that relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Because now your kids are going to be suffering in more ways than they ever needed to be. They're already suffering plenty.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you just throw a wedge there so you'll win.
Right.
Oh, so foolish.
Yeah, I mean, my rule back when all this happened, and then even now, is I'll speak the truth, but I'm not going to speak anything dishonoring to my children about my ex at all.
Yeah,
at all,
because
it is still, he's still their dad, right? And they have to honor their dad, but we can speak the truth. So I don't know. Let's just say, like, if my ex had lied, I could say, yes, he lied about that. Mm-hmm. But I'm not going to go on and be like, oh,
your dad's a liar.
No.
You can't trust the thing out of his mouth ever.
No.
Yeah.
No.
There's a difference.
And yeah. So I was real careful about that, you know, because your kids are watching what you're saying too, you know, it's still their parent, you know, and so you need to, you know, so you can speak truth, but you need to speak in an honoring way.
Yeah, I totally agree. Okay, well, so here, let's wrap up. The divorce, whatever got you divorced, that's not always one thing, but it sometimes looks like one thing. There's normally some fruit and root issues, right? There's navigating that. There's navigating the divorce process. There's navigating the aftermath. They're all different
stages.
They're all different stages. They all have their own trauma and their own ripple effects. For the love of goodness, don't do anything stupid. Don't do anything quick. Breathe, rest, and be ready to focus on your family and yourself. Mm-hmm. And you may need to mend some relationship, and you're going to lose some friends, and we'll talk about that in the next episode, yep. How to navigate that.
Yep.
But you've got so much, you don't even know what's coming. You don't know, and we're here to tell you, there's a lot coming your way, and breathe, mm-hmm. rest, eat right, sleep, all the things, just common sense stuff, and quit worrying about, will you ever find love again? Maybe, maybe not.
But that's not the goal
right
now.
It's not even the goal.
No.
It's not. It's quick thinking to think, oh, I failed at a relationship, so a success will be a new good relationship.
Yeah.
It's like, that's not the way to look at it.
Yeah.
So that's why I try to screen people. All right. Thank you for this conversation. It has been wonderful.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Unyoked Podcast with me, Todd Turner. Can I ask you a favor? Two, actually. First, rating and reviewing this podcast positively goes a long way to help others find this resource. I get told constantly, I wish I knew of this podcast earlier. Well, you can make that happen with just a simple rating on the podcast app you're listening to right now. Also, when you're done with that, please go to toddturner.com/books and purchase, gift, and review the resources that we have available for those needing help in their divorce journey. It's a lot easier handing somebody a book sometimes than handing them a podcast. And your Amazon reviews really help get our books higher on the chart for others to find. ToddTurner.com/books. Thanks so much. And please, really, just review the podcast really quick. Thank you.